You and that man crush on Tommy Malone.
I don't know why it's a man crush.
Well, because you love the guy.
I'm not that big of a fan of soft tossing lefties, but
you do love the guy.
If he can get the job done.
Yeah, love the guy. We are joined by John Pessa, author of The Game, Inside the Secret World of Major League Baseball's Power Brokers. John, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Bob. How are you today?
Not too shabby. Hey, I want to ask you, so I want to talk to you about the Twins, but I want to ask you, how I thought about this, we talked briefly yesterday about coming on today, and I never asked, how is A-Rod playing in New York? I mean, we got, and I want to, there's a correlation here. Adrian Peterson, you know, everybody knows what happened with him. Well, he came back yesterday. He had a news conference. He started, to me, rehabbing his image. Now, it was a completely different set of circumstances with A-Rod and the steroids, but he's been playing decently. Are people, I mean, does he get cheers now when he comes to bat? Is he getting any boos? I mean, have people accepted him now and just moved on?
People have accepted him and moved on. That's the easy answer. It's more complicated than that, but overall, that's pretty accurate. I mean, he got a curtain call for the home run after, when he surpassed Willie Mays. And, a lot has to do with the fact that he has, 11, 12 home runs. He's batting 270 to 280. And in that lineup, that's one of the best averages in that lineup. He's their number three hitter. And he came to spring training, you know, with them thinking that he had a fight for a position. He may even be platoon. And now he's their number three hitter, which is the best, you know, where you put your best hitter in the lineup. So people cheer him, and, he's one of the reasons why in a really, really weak division, after losing 10 of 11 games, the Yankees are in first place.
Still in first place. Now, this is something we talked about yesterday, John, because AP had his, Adrian Peterson had his news conference, and we said, you know, once, and callers did too, once he gets on the field, rips off a few big runs, helps him win, all will be, you know, I don't want to use to forgive him, but put aside. It's not even going to be forgotten, but it'll be put aside, and they'll just cheer for him and what he's doing. And A-Rod's, both of them, what they did in their own way were bad things, but people do have a way of putting things aside when success comes with the player.
No, there's no question. I mean, if A-Rod would be striking out, with bases loaded all the time, which he did a lot of in 2013, people would be booing him, and columnists would be writing, would be time for Alex to retire and don't let the door hit you on your way out. But he's performing, so people now are embracing him. I don't know about the Yankee management, but the fans are, and I assume, I watched Peterson's press conference online. A couple of things struck me about, I mean, you got to know, obviously he's rehabbing his image right now.
Yes.
And we know that people like him hire, crisis management lawyers and consultants, and almost nothing that he does or says at this point, it hasn't been vetted. By his handlers.
His Twitter rant wasn't vetted. We know that until the end.
That's the question. I mean, I actually emailed one of the people that I know that's part of that team, and I know he wasn't going to be able to answer the question. But I said, I don't understand. He's trying to rehab his image, and he's talking about the Vikings not supporting him, and he's talking about not wanting to guarantee the rest of the contract when he's coming back to a $12.75 million contract in a country where people are worried that they're not going to have a job tomorrow.
Yeah, and it's $13 million because he showed up and he'll get the $250
right,
as part
exactly.
of a bonus. Now, also, John, beyond you wrote the game Inside the Secret World of Major League Baseball's Power Brokers, but also, you were an editor at the sports editor at the Hartford Current at Newsday, and you helped launch ESPN the magazine. So you certainly have been involved with football and every other sport. That's why I wanted to get your take on an AP.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've covered just about everything, and I've been sports editor for a long time, and these are issues that we've been dealing with for a long time. It seems like we deal with more of these issues now than we used to. I don't know whether we just know about them more because there's more, the information is more out there than it used to be, or we're reporting it more or it's happening more, but we certainly do talk a lot about these stories now, don't we?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And that's why I wonder too, like, for instance, in the, in the tabloids in New York, and is he a two or three page or a paragraph? I know ESPN mentions it, but how is he, viewed on the East Coast? Is it just like a little blip on the screen, or is this a big deal, him coming back around the country, or certainly in your part of the country, which is the East Coast.
I got to tell you that, I mean, a good sign of this is the New York Times, which, you know, is writes these kinds of stories. You know, this is their specialty, ran an AP story inside. No disrespect to the Associated Press, but if you're the New York Times and you think a story is important, you send your own writer.
Yep.
So they didn't have anybody there. They didn't even hire anybody there, which is something that they would normally do.
They have a guy here that does a lot for him, and they didn't have him do it.
Right. Exactly. And so it was, you know, it wasn't, you know, I watched ESPN. I mean, it was covered, but it wasn't the lead story, which it would have been, you know,
well,
5 months ago.
Sepp Blatter took care of that.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, and maybe the whole, you know, lack of support complaint and the rant on the contract, maybe that was a misdirection. I don't know, because the strategy doesn't make sense to me if you're trying to rehab your image. But no, it's not. You know, USA Today did a piece on it and had a video, their own video on it. But, you know, people are talking about him coming back. And more than they are talking about the issue. And, you know, we're not going to, you know, the only people that are really going to know about that issue are those closest to him.
Yep.
And, you know, let's, you know, the hope and prayers are that, you know, that he's passed that incident and has learned, you know, about what to do and what not to do.
The one thing that strikes me about that is, well, I'll go back to his Twitter rant, and people around here have seen it and heard about it. Until the last few, which clearly weren't written by him, I have never seen someone who so mangled the written word yet, and he wasn't eloquent, but he handled it so well yesterday. And it wasn't just talking points. Some of it, I think he was talking. There were talking points, but he spoke from the heart, and he was clear. It was linear thinking and linear speech, but that rant he had was just so, I don't know, it was distorted and contorted. I've never seen anyone like that.
I don't know Adrian. I just know people in this situation. Let's face it, Adrian is his own business. I mean, you know, we're looking at a rather lucrative profit center, are we not?
Yeah.
Okay, so I guarantee you that there were mock press conferences that he went through and that he practiced. And I would too. If I was him, I mean, I think that's the way you handle these things. So to make sure your thinking is out there and clear. But you know, I've heard you know, people complain. You know, you talk to lawyers look, put it this way: you talk to lawyers of Alex Rodriguez in 2013 when he was suing everyone in sight.
Yeah,
and you're going, you got a bad client because you, no matter what advice you give them, you can't get them to do the right thing. And it seemed like Adrian went off the rails there on that rant.
Yeah, well, now he'll have Twitter practice.
Yeah.
Practices when he goes. Now, I want to talk about the Twins. I want to get to them again. They had a fabulous May. June has started. They didn't lose last night. But how have they caught on again around the country the way I think they could? If they could keep this up, they certainly will. But is it right now people have the same, we'll see how it plays out. The way Kansas City was to see how they play out last year this time.
I think so. And you're not looking at a breakout player. Like, I mean, yesterday all we saw was on TV was about Joey Gallo, and he came through too.
Yeah, for Texas. Yep.
Yeah. So. But I want to talk a little bit about a guy I know a lot about and you guys are learning about. I mean, the Phil Hughes who pitched today's first game is the Phil Hughes that I watched in New York, where, you know, one game he looks like, oh, my God, this is a guy who's going to win the Cy Young. And the next game you look like, why did we even have him on the team? And the question I have, and maybe it was asked and answered already, is I don't understand why Molitor pitched him in the day game when his entire history of pitching in the day is terrible, especially this year. I mean, this year he's 2-3 before this game. He's 2-3 with a 5.40 ERA in night games, which you have tonight with your team. He's 2-1 with a 3.54 ERA, and that's the way it was with the Yankees. Anytime there's a day game and he pitched, I went, oh, this is going to be a bad day.
Well, actually, that's a great point because it doesn't matter. I mean, if you're pitching on that day, it doesn't matter when you pitch him because
it's not
like he needs a little extra rest there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether, you know, the pitcher that he's got going in the night also has day-night issues. I mean, you know, what it tells me about Phil Hughes is he still hasn't developed his off-speed pitches enough to get by in daylight that he needs night. And, day is just a little bit different than playing under the lights. And he's always had, you know, he's a two-pitch pitcher. and as a starting as a relief pitcher. I had a long talk with David Cohn once about this when he was with the Yankees, when Hughes was the Yankees.
Yep.
About what the best use of Phil Hughes was, because he only has two pitches, and he goes, I've been telling the Yankees all along this guy belongs in the bullpen. That night, he pitched the eighth inning, and that was the year where he was the eighth inning guy for Mariano, and it was something like a 184 ERA, and he was just shut down eighth inning, which the way the game is played today, that's a great thing to have.
Now, so you obviously have spoken to Phil Hughes when he was in New York, and you got to know him. Did you get the impression that New York was a little too much for him?
I got the impression that Phil Hughes was much more comfortable playing in California, which is where he's from. And then he was, I don't know that it was a matter of that. I don't think he was one of those guys who couldn't play in New York. I just think he's one of those guys who you need to handle just right to get just the right out of him. He's really talented. You know, may not work as hard as someone else, and I'm not saying he doesn't work hard, but, you know, might not work as hard as the hardest worker on the team, and maybe that would help. And maybe he just needs to be handled in a certain way. I mean, being a manager isn't about, you know, putting a guy up, you know, in number three and number four. It's trying to figure out how 25 really high-strung people are going to get them to perform their best as a unit 162 times, which is a lot of times. And that's what a manager's job is. And with Hughes, I think it's just a little bit harder. And I think you find that more with California guys than you do with New York guys who are hyper-aggressive, and maybe you got to be able to dial them back. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Now, we're talking to John Pessa, author of The Game Inside the Secret World of Major League Baseball's Power Brokers, and a big part of your book was Bud Selig. What is this Bud Selig, the Selig experience that they've got now? If you go to their ballpark, Miller Park, you're going to see they've actually had, it's a tribute to him that you don't often see at ballparks.
I got to tell you that and this kind of goes with my take on Bud. I think Bud did a really great job in some aspects of being commissioner, and I think there were places, steroids, the 94 strike being two obvious ones, where I think you can say there were other choices he could have made. But one of the things that you do in studying Bud, and I basically lived his life with him for 5 years, and he was commissioner for 22. Is Bud saw the commissioner's job as one of the most powerful and prestigious jobs in the country. And, you know, maybe it is. Maybe you can make an argument.
Yeah.
But I almost look at this as his president.
Really?
And, you know, Bud, you know, the prologue of the I kind of don't, it's kind of like a spoiler alert, but there's a kind of a kicker to the prologue where he's throwing out the first pitch with at Miller Park with George Bush, who was president in April of 2001. And in a presidency that at that time was going really well, and it just passed that mammoth tax cut, and he came out there. And if you want to get an idea of how Bud viewed his role in America, that prologue is online. It ran as an excerpt in Men's Journal, and it's all 2,000 words, so it'll take 5 minutes to read. But that'll give you a good idea of how Bud saw himself, and that makes having a Bud Selig experience, which is basically a kind of a presidential library type take, you know, the history of Bud Selig for 22 years and all the decisions that he made.
Is he doing anything with the Brewers, or is he just in retirement?
It's called Commissioner
Emeritus. Yeah,
they're paying him between $35 and $40 million.
Oh my God.
Which is you know what Rob Manfred told me that he was going to be paid, and it'll be between 5 and 6 years. And the more work that he ends up doing for baseball, the higher the payment. But the base of the payment would be $35 million.
Oh my gosh!
And he is there as a consultant for Rob Manfred to tap into when he needs him. I think it's a lot of money, and obviously we know that executives, I mean, the baseball executives and Bud in particular, since the highest profile, is a perfect metaphor for the CEO role in America today, is it not?
Absolutely. Hey, John, as always, the time just flies. John Pessa, author of The Game Inside the Secret World of Major League Baseball's Power Brokers. The quickest and easiest way is on Amazon.com, right, to find it, or go into your local bookstore.
Yeah, and it's Barnes & Noble has it on their Father's Day. If you're looking for a Father's Day gift this Bobby's a good one.
John, love talking to you. We'll talk to you again next week. Thank you.
Sounds good, Bob. Take
care. All right, bye. We're going to come back, talk to Pete Wagner and Al Newman, former Twin. Talk a little more baseball with them. It's a baseball season. Got to talk some baseball. We'll be right back.
The only win the Red Sox got on their road trip was the Rodriguez start in Texas. A drive to left, deep down the line. Gone, a home run for Brian Dozier.
That's Dick Bremer, Fox Sports North. Twins 0 for June. They wanted it to be. They wanted a May 32nd. They were afraid that this would happen. We are joined by Pete Wagner. Still trying to get Al on the phone, Al Newman. They do On Deck Radio, along with Gene Larkin and Helmsy here. He runs the board for that that fine show.
Love Pete, that guy.
Love that Helmsy?
Yeah.
Pete, how are you?
I'm awesome. How about you?
Not too bad. Has Helmsy been a real pain to work with?
No, actually, you don't even know he's there. I mean, I look up at about 10 to noon or so, and there's Helmsy sitting there. I'm like, oh, that's right, you're here.
So he's not always, like, interrupting you or anything?
No, it's silky smooth. Silky smooth.
That's shocking. I just wouldn't believe
that.
Well,
he's just in such awe. Harry Carey joined the show. We've got a very good version of that. Wouldn't you agree, Helmsy? That was pretty rock solid.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I know who it was. We won't even ask where he's from. I think it's a local guy.
Yeah, go ahead and ask where he's from. I see he's the same guy you're thinking of.
Does he do anything for Viking games?
No, he does not.
He doesn't.
This guy, he works at Braemar, of all things.
And really?
In fact, I'm going to argue that he's better.
You know what we're going to have to do? We're going to have dueling. We'll just have to have a duel.
Okay.
Dueling Harrys next Wednesday.
Oh, you know what? I think we should. I think it would be absolutely amazing. Harry doing Harry.
You know, actually, you know what, Pete, what we're going to do right now? We have Twins tickets to give away to Sunday's game against Milwaukee. And what you have to do, and you and I will decide, the callers, who does the best Harry Carey while we're on the right now, we'll do it.
Oh, I think it's fantastic.
651-989-9105. You do your best Harry Carey, you get the Twins tickets. 651-989-9105. You can use any line you want. You can talk about the Tube Tops. You can talk about Arnie. You can talk about anything. It doesn't matter what you talk about. Just let's hear your rendition or your version of Harry Carey. 651-989-9105. Hopefully we don't have any, they're not all cowards to give it a try.
Wasn't the Tube Tap the greatest invention ever?
It was, and one of the best things about it is Harry talking about somebody in a tube top. he was just
spectacular. That was a left field line, I'd always say. Oh, man.
Yeah. He was great. And his glasses probably needed their own casket.
Oh, the goggles. I mean, it was greater as he got older and as things went on. He needed to come up with a little bit of a better. They got bluer as time went on. Remember that?
Oh, you mean because I always remember just being black. He lightened them up a little with the blue ones?
Yeah, remember the light blue ones? If you YouTube it, you can come up with some good product there. You'll be very impressed.
I'm going to have to take a look into that one. Now, obviously the Twins now have lost two straight in Boston. It happens. You know, you get a little bit of a dip in there. The key is that it not continue for too long.
Well, this team hasn't lost more than two games this year, other than the start of the season. So after the 1-6 start, they've been able to really avert any disasters that way. Yesterday's game is what it is. I mean, it's a 1-0 game. Buchholz was terrific. Palfrey was really good. That thing could go either way. And you come into a little bit of a buzzsaw here today with the young rookie pitcher who gets the job done. Eduardo Rodriguez picks up his second win. He was absolutely dazzling to the Texas Rangers back last week. So, you try to get 2 out of 2 in these series, and you can't let the highs get you too high and the lows get you too low, as cliche as it is. Baseball's an everyday sport, 162 games. There's going to be times where you get beat, but you just have to win more than you lose.
Yep.
It's that simple.
Now, Pete, we have somebody on the line here, a Harry Carey imitator. And again, if you want to give it a shot, 651-989-9105 to win Twins tickets. Who is this?
I hope I'm not butchering it. It's Rochelle in Woodbury.
It's Rochelle, yep.
Rochelle, you do a Harry Carey?
Well, kind of. I'm going to try. I just heard it on the radio and I had to call.
Okay.
I want to get tickets.
Go ahead.
Holy cow. That's it.
Well, we have to hear it more than once if you're going to. No. You can't just do one of those.
Okay.
Can you give me a Hey Arnie? Can you give me a Hey Arnie in there?
Okay.
Say Hey Arnie.
Hey Arnie.
All right, now say, hey, Arnie, look at that gal in the tube top.
Oh, God.
Michelle, you want those tickets or not?
I do. Okay, hi. Hey, Arnie, look at the gal in the tube top.
Boom. You know what, Michelle? I'm not even going to take another caller. You're going to get those tickets.
Yeah, I have to say, I think we got a winner. You just put her through the ringer. Good work.
No, well, wait a minute. She's not done yet.
What a sport.
Oh.
Hey, Arnie, look at that gal in the tube top. Holy cow, look at those.
No.
Just stop it. Look at those. Come on. Come on, Rochelle.
Oh, God.
We'll only give you one ticket unless you...
Look at the gal in the tube top. Look at those.
Holy cow.
Come on, please.
All right, Rochelle, you're a great sport. Thank you.
Thanks.
Enjoy the game. I tell you what, Rochelle did a heck of a job. I don't think anyone has ever done Harry better, including Harry.
No, that was as good as they guessed. And you know what? Tip of the cap. Brought the A game.
Yes, she did.
Stepped up under duress. Didn't back down. I love it.
No, well, how could you not like that? You know, you do have to. You got to like somebody like that who lets you know that they really do want to get those tickets. Now, Pete, we're talking obviously about the Twins and the two losses. I mean, they lose tonight. It's three in a row. Obviously, they win. It turns it around. But as I started, we were saying earlier, you can't get too caught up if there's a few losses in there because they have shown that they can get things going. I don't think this is the start of a tailspin by any stretch.
Well, no, and you can't get too caught up on wins either. I mean, I think one thing that you can, like I say, the formula to winning at the major league level or at any level in baseball is win two out of three. If you get three out of four, unbelievable. But at bare minimum, two of two, those types of things, you got to sweep those two game series, and you have to, you know, the pitching has to be there, which will feed the hitting. And you know, Dozier hits his 10th home run today. He had two of their hits. I think they had four, five, six hits today, not a lot. But there's going to be those types of ball games. So. No reason to panic. Paul Molitor is not the type of manager that's going to allow for that, given the attention to his detail that he's had with this team. And, you know, the thing that's interesting is Tommy Malone's coming up from AAA to start the
tomorrow
final game of the series tomorrow. Yeah, 4-0, the .70 ERA, 47 strikeouts, 38 2/3. Have you ever heard of an ankle impingement before?
You know, they come up with all these things. It used to just be sore ankle injury. Now it's an impingement.
Bilateral leg.
That's
leg
exactly
weakness.
Where I was going to say when we know the Maurer thing.
But I will say this: to the credit of Major League Baseball, at least they tell you what it is.
Unlike
and
hockey,
NHL lower body. Who cares? We all know it was his knee. Just tell me what happened to his knee. So at least we have that. So I did a little research on the impingement, what it really meant.
Well, please share.
Well, so it's either in the front or the back of the ankle. I don't want to say it's a bone spur, but what happens is if you sprained your ankle at some time or you had some sort of trauma injury to your ankle or a joint like that, there can be a bony growth that comes out right, but it grows out right between where it bends. It can apparently be quite painful. And that's what was driving some of the speed off in Alaska's fastball there, which was getting absolutely slaughtered in the first and second inning the other day against Toronto. So knowing what it is, get it, understand it. But it looks like, you know, if he can't go tomorrow and they're trying to avoid the DL, but one of the things they said is it could take 4 weeks for something like that to feel right.
Well, you don't want to mess with the impingement.
I guess he's got an impingement. But I would say this, that's the third time now we've had an issue with this guy. $49 million over, what, 5 years? To me, that's becoming a little too common. If I'm starting to look at it and say, wow, this guy, there's something. He's been pitching well. But
yeah.
At some point, you have to say, is this happening all the time? Or is this player damaged goods? Is he fragile? What's happening here?
Well, you know this because you've been around all sports. There are some guys that just get hurt a lot.
There's
some never do.
And there's some guys that blow that off and play through it and might give you 2 years worth of productivity, and that's it because it gets worse and they don't listen to their bodies, right?
Yep.
And there are other guys that are very particular about, I don't feel right, I'm not going to play.
No, you're absolutely right. Now, Pete, let me ask you another question. Do you follow the Saints at all?
Not as much as I should, because I'm just engrossed in the American Legion and the high school brand right now. So
well, because it so happens we also have some Twins tickets, or excuse me, some Saints tickets to give away. And this time you don't have to imitate anyone. 651-989-9105 is the number. 651-989-9105. We have a quick question. Whoever comes closest to the right answer, or a few questions, will win tickets. A pair of tickets to see a Saints game. So call quickly, 651-989-9105. You could win some Saints tickets. It's all give around here, Pete.
That's all we do is give, Bob. Have you been to CHS Field yet?
I have not, but everyone that has gone is raving about it. And their phones are lighting up.
Is that funny? They're lighting up. Nobody wanted to do Harry, but everybody wants to see CHS Field.
Well, because people are afraid. Hey, Rochelle put it on the line, and she won.
It better be President's Club.
I'm sure they'll take care of everything with
it. You know, President's is the one right behind home plate.
Yeah, it's wonderful there. Now, we have our first caller ready yet? We what? We don't?
Give me a second.
All right. You know what we're going to ask these people? Now,
ready
Al.
Now.
Okay, go ahead.
Jim and Hudson.
Jim, how are you? This is an easy one for you, Jim. Are you ready?
How are you?
Al was going to join us, but we can't reach him, so he's not here. But here's what the question is for Al. It's related to Al Newman, okay? You just have to tell me, what was the best batting average Al Newman had in his 8-year major league career? And whoever comes closest wins. Throw out a number there.
324.
Okay, hold on a second. We'll go to our next caller. Are we there? Who's that?
Hello.
Hello.
This is Tony.
Tony Ramsey.
Tony. Al Newman's.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. And Pete Wagner's with us. All you have to do, come closest to Al Newman's best batting average in an 8-year major league career. What was it? First call.
247.
Okay, hold on. Let's go to our next caller. Hello?
Chad and Ramsey.
Chad, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Okay, what's his best batting average in 8 major league seasons for Al Newman?
291.
Our winner is Tony. He said 247. He had a 253 batting average in 1989. That was his best of all time. That 324 was a little optimistic. 291 also, but he was a hell of a player, hell of a utility player for the Twins. And spent one season with Texas. But congratulations getting some Saints tickets. Pete Wagner, always great talking to you. On Deck Radio Saturday. You're on from 11 to noon.
We are, and we're going to talk about some hitting for the young players. We're going to get into mechanics. We take a little segment where we kind of break that stuff down and try to help out all the players out there. And we're going to have a great show. Looking forward to it.
You always
11
do.
11 to 12, 11
with,
to noon.
With Pete Wagner, Al Newman, and Gene Larkin, and Helmsy at the controls. Pete, thanks again. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Thank you. Talk to you next week.
All right. Going to come right back, talk to Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune. Jim's segment sponsored by Premier Pool and Spa. We will be right back. We are back, and we are joined by Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune. Jim's segment sponsored by Premier Pool and Spa, which features the Arctic Spa. Built in Canada, the Arctic Spa can handle Minnesota winters. Premier Pool and Spa, they take fun seriously. Jim, good afternoon to you, sir.
Good afternoon, Bob. It's raining. I'm going to the Rolling Stones tonight, and I'm very delicate. I'm like, no.
What are they? Does the show go on? They're not afraid of anything shorting out. No, if there's no lightning, the show goes on, right?
Yeah. In fact, I did not go to U2 when they played at TCF Bank, which I regret. I saw them in Target Center a long time ago, and people who went said that the rain almost added to the experience, made it kind of like a clean Woodstock, if you will.
Well, those guys won't get wet because they're going to have a cover over where they are, I'm sure.
Yes, because I really think if Keith Richards got wet, it would be like that scene from Raiders of the Lost Ark where the guy's face just melted right off.
It's sort of done some melting already, it looks like.
Well, yeah, it has, but it's more like a candle now rather than a bleeding skull.
Doing that. That's good. Hey, I want to talk to you about the Twins, but before we do that, during the break, I saw this this piece about Jared Allen being moved to defensive end with the Bears. And that's probably not a bad thing to
linebacker.
Do with him. Yeah, what did I say?
Defensive
linebacker.
End.
From defensive end to linebacker, outside linebacker. Thanks for catching that there, Helsey. probably not a bad thing for him.
No, I think probably a necessary thing, because what always struck me about covering Jared Allen is he was not a massive, over-muscled guy. Obviously, he was big and strong and had great leverage and great technique and great quickness. But, you know, he was not a muscle-bound. He wasn't like Julius Peppers, where you look at him and go, oh, my God, who could possibly block him? You looked at Jared Allen and said, that's kind of a bigger, slightly bigger than normal guy, and he must be really skilled. And now you see him losing half a step, and he really doesn't have an advantage other than good technique. Good technique doesn't help you much if you don't have much power behind it. So I didn't move him to the outside linebacker instead of trying to have him do the Alan Page thing and lose 5 pounds a year until he's out of the league. Probably makes a lot of sense. He's quick. He's good technique. He's a good tackler. But I just don't see him beating an offensive tackle at his current physical state very often.
And that's what he'd be faced with, 300-plus-pound guys every single play here. I mean, yeah, he'd be coming from the outside. Probably he'll be picked up by somebody else. And he could get by a lot of these. If it's a running back trying to stop him or a tight end, he can get by these guys.
Right.
Power himself past them.
And he always stayed in incredible shape. He did a lot of martial arts workouts. He used his hands very well. He had great footwork. But if you're not a certain weight in today's league, and let's go old school on the spot. Remember when you and I started covering the NFL, there were 230-pound centers. There were 270-pound tackles. Now, you got to be what, at least 310 to play offensive tackle in this league?
Well, Jim,
you got to have a certain amount of mass or you can't compete.
When I first covered the Vikings in the mid-80s, 84 and then 85 with Bud Grant and then Jerry Burns in 86, Curtis Rouse, the Boo Boo Rouse, was a tackle with them, and he did start some games. He was, I think, quite a bit over 300. They said he was 310. Same thing with Refrigerator Perry. They put him somewhere at 310 when you know he was close to 400. But he was the only guy. They were the two of maybe three guys in the league that were over 300 pounds.
Right.
Perry and Curtis Rouse, and maybe there was another guy in there. It's stunning. Now, an offensive tackle, I don't think there could be any that are under 300 pounds.
No. Maybe there's a guard here or there, but maybe a center.
Yeah, centers
under 300, but not many of them.
Yeah, they've gotten a little bit larger. Now your Twins, 0-for-June. No reason to panic yet, though.
I don't know if there's reason to panic. There's never reason to panic.
No.
I don't know what good panic ever does. But it is interesting now. You see them, they faced a couple of good pitchers who pitched well the last couple of days, lost both games. And this is something, I think, to be worried about, because I was worried about it before they lost these two games. Their lineup is very shallow. And when the top four hitters don't produce, and the top four hitters have overproduced, basically. You know, they've not only hit well, but their numbers of runners in scoring position have been ridiculous. You can't count on that happening. To me, to sustain the kind of success they've had, they're going to need a deeper lineup. And it's not a deep lineup when you're batting somebody like Escobar fifth or using somebody like Escobar as a DH. I think they really need Kenneth Vargas right now. You put Vargas in the five hole, and all of a sudden, maybe Rosario is your six hole hitter, and all of a sudden you have what looks like a major league lineup. Right now, it's if the top four guys don't produce, you're kind of stuck. So I think they need to get Vargas back in the big leagues as fast as possible.
Well, he's certainly been doing it down in the minors. But Escobar got his third home run of the season.
Yeah, I know.
And you know what?
Listen, he's a good player. He's a useful player. He should be on the team. But he shouldn't be that in fifth.
No. No, and... when you look at that, when you look at the lineup, it's amazing that they're still, nine games over 500.
Yeah, I mean, when a team wins, everybody tends to jump on what's gone right, and that's right and understandable. What's amazing to me is that they're 9 games over 500 with all things that have gone wrong, with Irvin Santana's suspension, with Maurer not driving the ball, with, Vargas getting sent down, with Santana playing poorly so far. With none of their top prospects being called up yet, when we talk about whether their winning was sustainable, I didn't think winning exactly the way they had been was sustainable. I think they're going to need some help from the minor leagues and from Santana if they're going to, be a contender all year long.
You know, earlier, Jim, we had on a guy named John Pessa who he'd been a sports editor at Newsday and some other place. He wrote a book about baseball, and he's very familiar with Phil Hughes. And he made the point that Hughes never, when he was with the Yankees, threw well during day games. And not there to ask him, but wouldn't you think that they would take that into account? Or maybe they just think, it was a fluky thing, then pitch him at night. And I don't know why. Maybe he squints too much. Who knows why he doesn't have success in day games.
Yeah, I don't think you have to figure out why things like that are true. You just have to accept that they're true.
And believe them.
Work around them when you can. I would have pitched Hughes at night myself. And, we've had very few reasons or opportunities to second-guess Mahler. He's done very good work so far. But, to me, that's one of the things. Don't try to figure it out. Just work around it. I think what Mahler is probably thinking is pitch the guy you think is going to go 7 or 8 innings in the first game, and then you know what you're working with your bullpen in the second game. But, if the guy doesn't pitch well in the day, then don't pitch him in the day.
Yeah. Now, you had mentioned, because I always check what you put on Twitter before you come on, and often quite amusing. What am I missing with the Lynx? Where I'm out of the loop here.
Oh, no. I was just mentioning that they do start their season, what's today? I was just tracking days.
Wednesday.
They start the season on Friday. And,
okay.
I think I've been one of the kind of the few columnist types who's actually spent a lot of time around that team. And I'm just stunned. One of my favorite sports figures in Minnesota is Lindsey Whalen.
He's been terrific.
And I just, I wonder how much she's got left. She's playing year round. The women make their big money overseas. And so they pretty much have to play over there. And, every year for the last 3-4 years, I've talked to her about just her knees holding out, how much she's got to find some time to take off. She's also playing internationally. I'm just stunned that they can compete year-round the way they do.
Have you ever talked, because I haven't, and I maybe you'd have to go there to figure it out, but where does all the money come from these international teams? Are they that well supported by companies and corporations there? Do they have that big a fan base? Why is women's basketball popular overseas and not really here? I don't get it.
It's a great question, and it really depends on what country you're in. I'm not an expert on this, but I've read a little bit about it. And it's like in Russia for a while there, all these rich guys, and knowing the way Russia works these days, that might mean mobsters, all these rich guys just started wanting to have the best women's basketball team and start competing with each other. And I don't know if they were making money, but they just wanted to have the best basketball team. They wanted to beat other people at that sport. So they spent tons of money. China, I do think that the women's basketball is more popular than it is in the United States. Eastern Europe, which is also a hotbed, it's some mixture of rich guys wanting to put their money there and the game being more popular than it is in the United States.
I honestly just don't get it, because it's not like just they all go to one league or one country.
No.
They're scattered throughout both continents.
Yeah, China, Eastern Europe, Russia, those seem to be the big ones right now.
And then they got so much money, they built a statue to Stephon Marbury.
Well, I mean, I had like 8 one-liners all hit me at once. I couldn't get any of them out.
You can get it to them fast enough.
Oh, good Lord. It's hard. I would say this. It's hard to pick on Marbury at this point because he's kind of admitted that he screwed up.
Yeah.
He admitted he never should have left the Timberwolves. I like the fact that he actually put out an affordable shoe that kids in the inner cities wouldn't kill each other over. He's gone overseas. He's been a good ambassador playing there. He blew it for himself and for Minnesota sports for not playing his career with Kevin Garnett. But at least he did eventually see the error of his ways.
Yeah. Now we've still got a bit of time here before the NBA draft. And anything, I'm just looking, this just came out minutes ago, New York, I mean, everybody's doing their own mock draft, but the New York Post has now switched and put Okafor going to the Timberwolves. I think it's going to be him, too. What are you thinking?
I had a conversation with a high-ranking Wolves official recently, and this is the way he put it. If you had an incredible amount of guts, you might take Porzingis, number one. Because he just might be Nowitzki or even better.
Yep.
Russell might be the best player in this draft eventually.
Yep.
Towns is the most polished, the most ready to play right now. And then Okafor has things that you, as they say in all the cliches, you can't teach. He's got massive hands. He's got gifted feet. He's got, a bigger than Charles Barkley type body. He's going to be impossible to cover in the low post. This person also told me that while it's true that Okafor didn't play a lot of defense in college, he said that Krzyzewski has let NBA scouts know that basically Okafor is under orders not to play defense. They only had like 8 scholarship players. Okafor was so important to have on the floor. They did not ever want him getting a cheap foul. So they basically told him, don't challenge shots. Don't play the pick and roll too hard. So it was, the conversation was kind of confirmed what my suspicion was, which is they're intrigued by Russell. They're intrigued by Porzingis. They like Towns. But when it comes, it's hard to ever get out of that conversation with the Wolves official without the last sentence being, but Okafor's a freak. So I think they're going to take Okafor.
Well, see, that's what I think, too, because Flip, every indication is that he just loves what he can do. The one thing about him is, and you just touched on it, with Krzyzewski, is he going to foul out of every game?
Right.
Because look what happened in the championship game. I mean, he does have trouble staying on the floor if you try to get him to play a little defense.
Right. But, of course, the Wolves official pointed out something else to me. He said that when Okafor did play Kaminsky, did go out on the floor to guard him, Kaminsky's a very difficult guy to guard because of the shooting range, he actually did pretty well. So it sounded to me like someone, without telling me that they're going to take Okafor, telling me that they're going to take Okafor.
Yeah. And that's what, that's where I think it will go. But then there's another guy that sort of is moving in. The New York Post has Mario Hezonja from Barcelona, which Ricky, we've known about that from there. But this guy's been moving up the charts.
Yes, he has. I don't know I don't think that guy's going to be a factor. Here's the more interesting question. I had this conversation with a longtime basketball writer who's kind of plugged in. What if Flip uses this draft not just to take the number one player, but to blow everything up and really start with a base that might bring a championship here? What if you trade Rubio to try to get into that top five or six, with a second pick in the top five or six, and end up with two of these great players?
Would Rubio do that because of his injury? Do you think he can get back? I mean, the twos aren't that big a deal to people.
But you would have to package Rubio, maybe a couple of second round picks, maybe a player, You'd have to trade Rubio to the kind of team that would value him. A team that needs chemistry, a team that needs ball movement. I don't know that it would work. I'm just saying that would be an interesting. Flip was not before. It was funny, before Flip signed Rubio to the big deal, the word around the organization was he wasn't that big a Rubio fan. And I think he grew to like Rubio. But is Rubio really going to get? We keep saying for 3 years, well, if he improves his shot, he's going to be great. Well, he hasn't. At some point, maybe he is what he is, a good player, but not a great player. Flip, I could see some traitor Rick in Flip. I could see him going out and if he could get the right pick for Rubio making a deal.
How about this, though? He winds up with Okafor and Porzingis.
How about that?
That would be a hell of a draft. Hey, Jim, time flies when we talk. We'll talk again tomorrow. Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune. Jim's segment sponsored by Premier Pool and Spa, which features the Arctic Spa. Built in Canada, the Arctic Spa can handle Minnesota winters. Premier Pool and Spa, they take fun seriously. Jim, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, take care. I'm going to take a quick break. You know what? We still have another pair of Saints tickets to give away. 651-989-9105, 651-989-9105 is the number to call. When we get back, you got a few minutes yet. We're going to take a quick break, also talk to John Tower. Talk to him about the NBA finals cranking up tomorrow night. We'll be right back. We are back. And you know what? We're going to give away another pair of Saints tickets, and we're going to talk also to John Tower. We got some people on the line here. Let's go with these two. Well, we've got two people go head to head.
Alex in Minneapolis.
Alex, how are you?
I'm hanging in there. How are you?
Good. For Saints tickets, here's what all you have to do. I'm going to let you pick a position, catcher, infielder, outfielder, or pitcher, and you're going to have to spell the last name of one of those position players. So you tell me which one you want. You want a catcher, an infielder, an outfielder, or a pitcher?
Let's go with the catcher.
All right. Vinny DeFazio. Spell DeFazio.
DeFazio?
Yep.
DeFazio.
It's pretty good. Hold on a second. You got it right. All right. Let's go to our next caller. Who's this?
Joe from Prior Lake.
Joe, how are you?
Good, yourself?
Good. Pick your spot. Catcher, infielder, outfielder, or pitcher?
I will go outfielder.
All right. Mike Kwasnicka.
Kwasnicka?
Yep.
Oh, jeez.
Now, you picked it.
Otherwise known as the guy that ran into Byron Buxton.
Yeah, that's right.
Kwasnicka.
Thank you for trying, sir. It's K, Kwasnicka. Next caller, pick your spot. Catcher, infielder, outfielder, pitcher.
Corey on line three.
Corey.
Yeah, I'll take catcher.
All right, this is the last of the catching positions. Joey Pashurik.
Pashurik.
Let's get to the first. See if we get the first one right.
Pashurik.
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 That was close. Pacioreek. Thank you. And let's go to where this first guy may win. Are you ready? Pick your spot. We're out of catchers, infielder, outfielder, or pitcher.
Alex this is already won.
For Saints tickets. Oh, that's all of them?
Yeah.
Oh, it's over. Thank you.
Alex, you win.
Alex, congratulations. I thought we had another caller on there.
Hey,
nice job with Vinny DeFazio. You must be Italian, too.
No, German.
No, you did good, though. Well, you know, back during the war, they were pretty tight. Never mind.
I did win my sixth grade spelling bee, though.
You did good. Maybe you had DeFazio then, too. Enjoy the game. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we go now to John Tower, coach of the basketball team, men's team at St. Thomas, and also a psychology professor at St. Thomas. John, how are you?
Doing great, pal. How are you today?
Good. Hey, you know, let me start with this. Your book is now officially out, right?
It is. It came out this week. Very excited. Youth sports, parents, motivation, and ways that we can create better environments for our kids.
And I'm guessing that people are excited about it because if you have kids, it's a book you'd want to read if you have kids in sports.
Well, I certainly hope so. Sometimes you feel like you're preaching to the choir, and the ones who want to really read it are the ones that might not need it as much. But it is an exciting time, and I think it's a topic that's certainly very relevant for all of us.
See, now, if somebody gave it to me as a gift, I would assume they think I'm a lousy parent when it comes to my kid being in sports.
That's one of the risks. So we want to make sure it's, you know, part of the subtitle is how to be the best sports parent you can be, with the idea that we all have room to grow. We all have ways that we can improve as parents. And, really it's intended to how do we create better experiences for our kids? And that doesn't mean always nice experiences. It means partly how do we create challenges for them that are going to help them grow and develop as people through challenging obstacles that teach life lessons.
Now, the one thing is, you know, when I guess the type of book you're describing, I would not feel the same way as if it was a book, How to Lose Weight or A Dummy's Guide to Losing Weight. Then I would really feel somewhat offended, but I think this book is a good one for people. Now, I want to ask you also, John, the NBA Finals is starting up. Fifth finals in a row for LeBron James, his sixth overall. He's 2-2 in them. He lost the first one. He lost with Cleveland, then lost his first one with Miami, won back-to-back, and then lost to San Antonio. Is there just that fire? I was talking to Helmsy here during one of the breaks, and I was saying that this seems like it was his team in Miami, but he doesn't have to spread it around the way he may have felt he had to do in Miami. There's not the Dwayne Wade that he has to make sure gets his shots. Yes, there's Kyrie Irving, but this is clearly his team. When he wants to take over, he's not hesitating.
Absolutely. I think part of his evolution as a player was that, you know, Cleveland was his hometown team. He grew up there, and so that was a different transition going to Miami, where he's a guy that, by all accounts, likes to fit in more than a Michael Jordan or a Kobe Bryant. And so I think here in Cleveland now, he's very comfortable, and I am the guy. You look at the big shots he's hit, you know, over the course of the year. I think he feels great about it. That said, I don't think this is the best supporting cast that he's ever had. And so it'll be fascinating to see them play the Warriors, where really if Kyrie Irving is out or limited without him in Love, you're looking at a team that doesn't look like an NBA champ on paper. But that's how good he is.
And we're talking to John Tower, the men's basketball coach at St. Thomas. When you take a step back, do you see what scenario does Cleveland win? Because Golden State is certainly a favorite in this. He would have to have lights out games across the board. I mean, they can't have, LeBron cannot have an average game and that team win.
No, I think that's definitely right. I mean, you look at some of the games he's put up this playoffs, and when he's, you know, 30 some points, 15 rebounds, 12 assists, you know, he may not have to average a triple double, but he's going to have to be pretty close. And they're also going to need the Warriors to miss shots, which, you know, they rely on the three a fair amount. They've been unbelievable at home, and so Cleveland's going to have to find a way to steal a game or maybe two in Golden State, which isn't going to be easy. That said, Klay Thompson, you know, he's diagnosed with a concussion. Injuries could play a huge role in this series. I think it'll be fascinating. I do think Cleveland, their depth and athleticism, the number of 6'6 to 6'8 guys they can run on the floor is the Cleveland can't match that.
Well, Klay Thompson's expected to play, but now you've had guys that have had concussions, and they go through the protocols in college, too. When they go back on the floor, are they still not right, or do you see guys when they get the okay, they just go right back to where they were? Or is there even some from not practicing, which are just not as sharp as they were?
Yeah, I think there's three or four issues. One is certainly the cognitive issue that the doctor's clear, but then you have the physical shape. They haven't been playing the same way or the same pace that they were. And you also have their confidence. Now, I don't think that's going to be as big an issue with Thompson because he hasn't missed a game, but we've had players before where if you miss two or three games, you come back out and you do feel a little rusty. So it's really a combination of the mental, the physical, and some blend of all of that.
And the thing, I wonder if it's different in football where guys, some of them are affected by confidence. They don't want to get hit that first time. Here in basketball, at any play, you can be hit in the head.
Well, you could get hit in the head.
But you don't expect it as much, though.
You don't expect it. And the other thing, though, is, you know, when you look at Klay Thompson, I'd say it has less to do with that and more to do with, does he feel right kinesthetically? Is he out on the court and shooting threes? Is he actually comfortable? Because if a concussion throws off his three-point shot, frankly, that's going to hurt the Warriors a lot more than it will if it throws off his rebounding or his aggressiveness a little bit.
Now, Howie, because obviously as a basketball coach, you certainly, you know, basketball is a big part of your life. How excited are you about this matchup? I thought last year's, I liked it because I wanted the Spurs to win just because it's a great story with Duncan and, you know, these guys have been together for a long time knocking off Miami because a lot of people didn't like Miami. I think LeBron and Cleveland are a lot more likable than he was when he was in Miami.
Well, I think it's nice, kind of his homecoming. But the other thing I look at LeBron and Curry, I think LeBron is as good an all-around player as the NBA has ever seen, ever. I think Curry's as good a shooter as the NBA has ever seen. And the cool thing about neither one of them has had really bad headlines. They've not gotten in trouble. By all accounts, they're good teammates. So I think that's pretty fascinating when you have these two stars who really are by, you know, in terms of role models. I tell my boys all the time, Steph Curry is the one guy. They're not going to be 6'8". They're not going to be 270. They're not going to be big and strong. But they can learn to shoot the ball exceptionally well and handle the ball. And I think Curry is a great role model for young athletes.
Well, and I think the best thing he did, and I don't think it was as calculated as some people. Some people were annoyed by it, some of the reporters or writers. I love when he brings his daughter up on the stage with him. It just humanizes him. And the kid's a cute kid, and she's hilarious.
You can see this star, the MVP of the NBA, and he's sweating a little bit because his two-year-old's not listening to him, and he's saying, hey, come back here, and she's not. I don't know that he'll keep doing it because the second time I think it wore a little thin, but we'll see. If they win the championship,
she'll
make
be
no
there.
Mistake, she'll be right there with the trophy.
No doubt. John Tower, coach at St. Thomas, also a psychology professor, and please give where people can get your book.
Yeah, it's on Amazon.com right now. WASPs, it's WOSP is the acronym, and so Itasca Book Publishing is the other place that they can get it. Very excited about it.
Great, John. Thank you. And, hey, by the way, I'm heading over to Old Chicago and Plymouth. I'll be there from 5 to 7. Come join me and stick around here and join Superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson. They're going to take you right till 7 o'clock. Again, John, thank you. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
That's a terror in each sip and in each sup. Will you partake of that last offered cup? Or disappear into the potter's ground when the man comes around.
The only pure sports talk station in the Twin Cities.